PODcast, PrideOfDetroit.com. Pride of Detroit, that is the name of where we are and what we do. We talk about the Detroit Lions, ladies and gentlemen. It is fantastic out here doing this thing for you. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the PODcast. If it's your first time, welcome back. If not, welcome back, Otter. And I am Chris Perfett, the adequate host at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. And if you can tell, I'm a little under the weather. I got tore up on Friday night, and then I bit my tongue yesterday on Saturday. So, and as we were doing the rundown with Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader, the sinking feeling also came in that my work and my master's thesis has meant that I have no clue what the Lions have done this week. So I'm going to really have to lean heavily on, again, the fearless leader, Jeremy Reisman. How are you, Jeremy?
I'm doing good here, and I'm up for the challenge. It's take us back to the first bite days. I'll just carry the pot a little bit.
I have my reservations. Because here's the other part of this problem, is that Ryan Matthews... Back is the motherfucker! At Ryan underscore POD. Ryan is, let's how we say, he's in a worse position than I am right now.
Yeah, I'm here though. I never miss a podcast.
Never. He's our Iron Man. He's our Cal Ripken. He does not want to ever miss a POD cast, but
he's also turning into the droopy dog of this podcast.
In what way?
Just I feel like every progressive episode, if we like just put his voice on a chart, it would just progressively get sadder and sadder.
No, okay. No. I mean, he's got a legitimate reason for it today. He is, we weren't even sure he'd be on this POD cast, to be honest.
Let's say that the reason for my voice being sadder and sadder might be because it's kind of just my reaction to like Detroit Lions free agency.
Or just man, I was gonna say Detroit sports in general.
No, that too.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, and our other voice just kind of, you heard the O in there. We've got a guest back. The one guest we seem to get repeatedly, the one who likes to keep coming on with us and who demands to keep coming on with us, Brett Whitefield from Pro Football Focus.
What's up, guys?
And he's actually got a mic this time, which is fantastic.
Yes, my wife. She was tired of listening to me sound crappy on podcasts, so.
My wife.
She bought me a mic.
Or I voice my wife.
We're still doing that, huh?
That's absolutely still a meme on Twitter. Like, okay. I don't know. All right, before we begin, we're jumping right into some Lion stuff. We're going to have a post of this up on Monday, if I can remember. But in case you are one of these people who just gets your news through us here on the PODcast, we now have a Detroit Lions Discord, Pride of Detroit on Discord. Hit up myself or Jeremy or maybe Alex Reno on Twitter, and we will get you a link if you want to join. We've had in the first week alone, we've had like we've been putting this on a very like low key rollout. I think in the first week alone, we've had like what, close to 100 people join.
Do you want to explain to people like me who may not know what the hell a Discord is?
So Discord is basically, it's I don't want to just say a chat room because that kind of sells it a bit short, but it is. It's pretty much, it's a chat room with multiple rooms to it. There's also a little bit of voice chat. We have a bot in there that will bring you every up-to-date article we put out on Pride of Detroit, but we have a lot of conversations that go on in there. There's Lions channel. Everyone wants to talk about the Lions this time of year. We've got a sports chat, gaming, wrestling. Yes, wrestling's in there as well. It's got its own room, so you can ignore it if you want.
Yes, you can mute rooms. I learned that, but one.
We set this up pretty much because A, we want more ways to talk to people. B, the offseason is long, stodgy, and boring, in my opinion, and I would rather hang out with people to talk about Lions games while playing video games, and see Fortnite. That's really most of the reason we set this up, because the entire staff except for me is playing Fortnite, and I would be playing Fortnite if I wasn't so damn busy.
And I mean, there we're toying with ideas in the future, like an audio Q&A. So you see a lot of Lions beat guys do mailbag questions live. This way we can answer them by voice live. That's something that I think would be pretty cool to do.
Yeah. This is us trying to stay on the cutting edge of your journalism, you know, with all the cool toys that everyone's using.
Yeah. And if you want to be like a part of the podcast mailbag, but you don't do Twitter or you don't comment online, we're going to start taking questions from in there as well. So
no, absolutely. It's fantastic. But without further ado, we should get on to the topics of the day. So the Detroit Lions, and excuse me while I try to pull up some of these free agency updates so I at least sound like I know what I'm talking about. Scrolling. So the Lions signed. Do you want to start here on Sylvester Williams?
Yeah, let's talk about it because I think a lot of Lions fans are pretty frustrated with the first week of free agency. They appeared to be pretty inactive. Some of their bigger needs hadn't been addressed. And then this week, they addressed some of those bigger needs. And yeah, we can start with Sylvester Williams.
Well, that was the first name I saw. I just realized that Luke Wilson and Jonathan Hankins also started this week, came in this week. So actually,
stop.
What happened?
Jonathan Hankins did not sign.
Oh, did I screw that up?
Jonathan Hankins may have a visit, probably not.
Have a visit. Okay, you guys were freaking out about someone, and I just can't remember. And it wasn't Luke Wilson, who absolutely filled that gaping, massive hole the Lions left after they just randomly cut Ebron. I don't know if Wilson really replaces him either, to be honest.
Well, yeah, let's ask that question. Ryan, yeah, Brett. Or Brett, jump in here.
I think Ryan's near a toilet.
What can the Lions expect from Luke Wilson? Is he going to be, you know, he's been a number two tight end for his entire career. Is he going to contend for the number one spot this year? Could he, you know, thrive in that role potentially?
Yeah, you know, they basically, based on what they have on the roster right now, and I think it's pretty obvious they're also going to draft somebody. It's pretty kind of alarming in the fact that I think he is the de facto starter kind of any way you slice it. I mean, even if Roberts takes a nice big step, it's still a really difficult position to, you know, transition from college to the NFL, especially a smaller college like Toledo. So I definitely think Wilson is the snap leader at tight end this year. Whether he, you know, fills that role well or not, I think will remain to be seen. But I do think Wilson and Ebron have a lot of similarities, actually. So I think he kind of fits right in with what they were doing with Ebron. Ironically, the you look at Wilson's tape, and the one thing that stands out is like Seattle just never used him right, you know. And I feel like we kind of said the same things about Ebron. And going into last season, we kind of really hoped that they would use Ebron as more of that move type tight end, the F type guy that you line up in the slot or wide. And they just didn't do that with Ebron a whole lot. You know, they still big time majority of his snaps were played from inline, and Wilson was kind of the same thing. You look at their athletic profiles and they both kind of profile as a guy that should be playing in the slot a lot more than they're not. And I think if they get Wilson in that role, I think you could actually see a little bit of a breakout from him.
It's interesting. Yeah. I remember going to Field Goals, the Seahawks blog at SB Nation, and they're writing every article I could find about him was talking a lot about his blocking, and it's not something that it seems like would be really in his arsenal, at least ideally so, but like they had him in F-back roles where he's playing essentially a fullback. They have him in a tight end a bunch. I mean, obviously that's a run heavy team in general. So I get them wanting that out of Wilson, but yeah, it does seem like he's being misused quite often there. And I mean, it very much like Jimmy Graham was, right? Until last year. So it's interesting. I still, my bar for him is still very low. I don't think this is a guy who's going to be able to get 600, 700 yards receiving. To me, he's more in the 300, 400 yard range. Do the rest of you see it that way? Or do you think maybe he could have that breakout role in 2018?
I'm always wary every time we talk about breakout, because that's a great thing to think everyone's going to break out during an off season, and it usually has not ended up that way. And to be honest, we're going to be looking at some pretty new stuff with this team next year, but I'm just adamant that this was a massive downgrade, especially when it comes from the inside passing game for this Detroit Lions team. And I'm not sure Luke Wilson really fixes that up. And like, I mean, it's good. I think if you're going to see an inside passing game, it's going to come from Kenny Golladay improving more than Luke Wilson breaking out.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, Kenny Galladay can kind of go everywhere, but to me, he's built to be more of an outside dude. But he is the guy that can stretch the field, which is something that the Lions had been missing and kind of wanted on Ebron, but never really got. But I don't know. I feel like expectations are a little bit too high with Luke Wilson. It's an economical signing. It's you're going to have a motivated guy, you know, in his hometown, essentially. And, you know, if he does have that starting role, he's going to be excited about it. Obviously, he's going to want to prove himself and earn himself a lot of money since this is a 1-year deal for him. But I don't know. I'm just trying to temper expectations a little bit, kind of like what you said, Chris. Whenever a free agency jumps ship, you know, to a new scheme, to a new coach, to, you know, an offensive genius or whatever, the idea is like, oh, this he's going to break out. But it rarely works out that well.
Yeah. Ryan, I think you were wanting to jump in there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think when you see the Wilson signing, just because of, like you mentioned, Chris, with how big of a need the Lions had by cutting Ebron, you know, this team had, you know, a tight end corpse that had a total of, like, what, 3 receptions among all of them. So when you add a guy who has also, like Brett mentioned, you know, somebody who was maybe miscast in their old role, which is, you know, which is what a lot of Lions fans felt about Ebron. I think you have fans who jump to these expectations that Jeremy's mentioning, but like, I think if we're going to temper those expectations, like Wilson's a complimentary piece. And like, that's what he's been his entire career. And he's been able to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And maybe he'll fill in. Maybe Nick Ballore will no longer have to be the de facto fullback. Maybe, if they want to use Luke Wilson in that way too, they can. So I think he's a complimentary piece. I don't think he's a guy who's going to, you know, catch 5 or 6 touchdowns or, you know, be this guy that I think, and that's what's going to be unfair about him too. It's going to be unfair to him is that fans are going to treat him. Do you think that fans will treat him as like everything he does is gravy in comparison to what Ebron did, or is he going to have like high expectations? Like, you know, Ebron never lived up to being a top 10 pick and he was never a dominant tight end. Like, is Wilson going to come in? Are those expectations placed on him now or no?
Honestly, I think Lions fans are just going to kind of forget that the tight end position exists as an offensive ability, that they're just going to forget that it exists because, yeah, I mean, anytime you're going to talk about it, it's going to be come back to Ebron, which I mean, how much we come back to Ebron is going to depend on how he does in Carolina. But just in general, like, I don't think people are really going to care much about what happens at that position this year. I don't know. Brett, do you have any thoughts on the matter?
Yeah, first thing, Ebron signed in Indianapolis.
Did I say? God damn it. Okay. My notes are all screwed up right now. I
he did adequate. Visit Carolina, though. So
yeah, there you go.
But yeah, to add to what both Jeremy, Chris and Ryan, you all said, you know, with Jimmy Graham leaving Seattle, it seemed like Wilson would have been an easy sign for them, at least to be that, you know, de facto backup guy in case they didn't land somebody else. I was surprised, like, even with they signed Ed Dixon, I think, even with that signing, it kind of like you look at their roster and you're like, man, it seems like Wilson and Dixon would have been a better fit together than apart. And it's I'm a little curious why that didn't happen. It could have been all on Wilson's side. I have no idea, to be honest. But that is intriguing to me. Like, why a really tight end needy team had the guy on the roster and they kind of let him walk. That's that is a little alarming. So I think that alone should probably temper some expectations.
Yeah, and I think Ryan brings up an interesting point in what the expectations for him will be. One of the things that I think Lions fans aren't going to be too happy with is that Luke Wilson kind of has a history of dropping passes too. He hasn't had as many targets, obviously, as Ebron has ever had, but their drop percentages are actually very, very close to each other. So I don't know.
I posted the completion percentages for Ebron and just by comparison, Jimmy Graham on Twitter the other day. I know, Brett, you jumped in there too. And again, my point was to basically say these guys complete passes at nearly comparably in the same area of rate. It's not like Ebron was a massive drop off. And I kind of expect all tight ends to kind of hover around where that is. Yeah, they're used in completely different ways, and everyone kept getting bogged down in that regard. That's like, I'm not saying Jimmy Graham was as good as Eric Ebron. I'm just saying, like, this idea that you're going to get a sure-handed tight end somewhere on the market is just kind of, yeah. As you say, Jeremy, it's going to be the same rate of drops.
That's a good point. If you look at the way a lot of Ebron's production, especially early in last season, I mean, it was all, this isn't a popular opinion by any stretch, but it was all free yards, essentially. He runs a lot of underneath drag routes, under zone coverage, and he catches the ball and, you know, he runs for 5 yards. I mean, that Luke Wilson could easily fill that role. I think where you're going to see a difference in production could be in, you know, Ebron's ability to separate on like those deep outs and stuff that Stafford liked to throw to him. I'm not sure Wilson. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got the athletic profile to do it. We just haven't really seen it. So right. I don't know. But I think from, you know, as far as being Stafford's dump off guy, especially when Riddick's not on the field, I think Wilson can definitely fill that role.
And the last thing I want to hit on with Wilson is, I mean, we briefly mentioned Michael Roberts. This guy's, you know, pretty high draft capital last year, played almost no real role with the team last year. What does Wilson's acquisition mean for him? And is it time to temper expectations with Michael Roberts too? Is he never going to be the number one guy? Is he always just going to be kind of this number two where, you know, he's kind of the hybrid Brandon Pettigrew role where he'll block a little bit, he'll catch a little bit, but he, you know, won't be a master of either.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of take a contrarian role. I think the signing of Wilson, the fact that they addressed it in such a small manner in free agency kind of tells me maybe they're a little higher on Roberts than we think they are. And you look at down the stretch of the year, Roberts did start contributing, you know, 15 to 20 plays a game on a consistent level. You know, as opposed to early in the year when he played six here, five there, five right. there, you know. So there could be a really – I mean, we still have the draft, and they could very well grab Dallas Goedert at 20 and tick everybody off. But so far it looks like that maybe there is a chance they're pretty high on Roberts and the strides he's made, although you wouldn't have known that based on, you know, sleeping through team meetings and stuff.
Right, exactly. But it's interesting because I think it was MLive's Kyle Monke who said the same thing, that he's hearing from inside the organization that they're very high on a guy like him. Of course, we've heard that sort of thing from so many. Like, we hear the same thing about Jace Billingsley, right? Like, the team's very, very high on Jace Billingsley. And, yeah, you know, the guy, he's played in one game or whatever. So I don't know if it's all just kind of interior buzz, but I'm curious as to what this does mean for Michael Roberts, because I think a lot of people like you, Brett, are expecting the team to draft a tight end. I don't think it happens in the first couple of rounds, but it definitely seems like it's an option out there. And if that's the case, then Michael Roberts suddenly is the third string guy again, and that's not what you want out of a second year dude.
All right. We spent more time on that than I thought, so we're going to take a break, and I think we come back to Sylvester Williams. Is that all right, Jeremy?
Yeah, we'll talk about Sylvester Williams. A lot of people have been asking this week about Jonathan Hankins, so we'll talk about Hankins a little bit.
Yeah, definitely the entire defensive line, I think, is up next. Those have kind of been the two big stories, right, is kind of the short yard passing game and what's going to happen, especially with the inside with tight ends and slot, and what's going to happen with this defensive line. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. PODcast rolling along, kind of damaged, kind of bruised, kind of sick. It's been a rough weekend for everyone. And speaking of being
not
bruised
me.
Up.
I'm doing great. Final four, baby.
Woohoo.
I don't know how long I can just stay silent here and just shoot dagger at you. But either way, let's talk about the defensive line. Speaking of battered and bruised up, the Lions have had to do quite a bit there, and I think they still need to. And throughout this week, we saw some rumors of Jonathan Hankins, but now I'm seeing a lot of people are kind of, I mean, it doesn't look too great that the Lions are going to land him, seeing he's got a lot of different suitors. And
well, yeah, I mean,
oh, go on.
It was just a crazy week because we'd all been waiting on Hankins because, you know, Brett, I know you've been a big proponent of Hankins. I think everyone was. He prime run stopper, seemed like a perfect fit to fill Haloti Ngata's shoes, who left for the Eagles. and we just heard nothing for the longest time. Fans were getting fed up, and then immediately rumors hit that Hankins has a meeting with the Lions scheduled, and then not even 24 hours later, the Lions go and sign Sylvester Williams instead. And it's just like, oh. And we're still sitting here today wondering what happened with Hankins. Is the meeting still on? Do the Lions have enough cap space to get him? I think the answer to all those things is probably no. I mean, I don't really see why the Lions would want both Hankins and Williams, and I certainly don't see how they could afford it into their budget if they want any leftover money for both their draft class and sort of any emergencies like they needed with Taylor Decker last year. And obviously they brought in that defensive end who I always forget, Dwight Freeney. If you want to have that sort of money hanging around, I don't think you can afford Hankins at this point. The fact that there's been so much silence to me probably tells me that the meeting isn't going to happen, but we'll see. I there are a lot of Lions fans that are asking me on the daily whether that's going to happen, and it seems like a pipe dream at this point. I'd love for it to happen, and if it means cutting guys like Cornelius Washington or Keem Spence just to fit him in, I might still be behind it. But I don't know, Brett, what are your thoughts on this? Were you surprised to see the Lions jump on Sylvester Williams, and did you think it was kind of destined for Hankins to land there?
I mean, the match between the Lions and Hankins is perfect. I mean, he grew up in the area. His agent is still based out of the Metro Detroit area. It just seemed kind of like one of those things. Oh, well, this is going to happen, you know, like, so I was really surprised. I was most surprised though that they announced the meeting with Hankins. And then I want to say within an hour or two from that announcement, they announced that Williams was visiting. And then an hour or two after that, Williams signed. It was like, well, man, they must have really liked what they talked to Williams about. And obviously he's coming on a much cheaper deal than Hankins would. So from a cap management standpoint, I guess it makes sense because you're filling a similar role. I just think Hankins is he's a premier run defender where Williams isn't. You know, he's a good run defender, but, Hankins is one of the best in the NFL. He has been for several years now, and he's only 25 years old. That's the crazy part. He's played 5 years in the NFL, and he's only 25 years old.
So I guess just talking about this out loud, do you think this is maybe a negotiating ploy by the Lions? Like they're closing in on a deal with Sylvester Williams. They put it out there that they've got something with Hankins and drive the price down a little bit.
Yeah. Or could very well be the case, or it could have been the other way around where Hankins was just any team that called for a visit, they were making that public to kind of, stir up the suitors for him and drive his price back up a little bit after he was cut. So I think it could go both ways there. The Lions that day, they announced, I think, three guys were visiting, right? It was Williams, Hankins, and then...
Well, there was Ricky G. There was a whole Ricky Jean-Francois thing where he was signed and then he wasn't. And and again, another thing that's just we've been completely in the dark with since. I have no idea. I mean, that to me makes sense, like getting him additionally makes sense. He's also going to be an economical guy. He'll be a guy that's part of the rotation. I expect that to happen still, but at the same time, Ricky Francois put that out there on Twitter. Like I feel like Donald Trump with all the fake news. So he can't really be happy with all the reports that leaked that he was already signing.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened either with, the ties to Patricia, obviously. It just kind of seems like they're getting a little log jammed with like the same type player.
Right.
You've got, A'shaun, Spence, Williams, Christian Ringo. I just kind of feel like Ricky Jean at this point would be a little redundant. They really need a pass rushing big guy, but.
Right. Well, yeah, I think a lot of people think Akeem Spence can be that guy, but he wasn't last year, and I don't really see it happening. I think they'd rather Akeem Spence be the guy coming off the bench in that role rather than the starter. But let's talk a little bit about Williams and what he does bring to the team. You have any background or any juicy Pro Football Focus stats to hit us with Williams?
Yeah, he's a plus run defender for sure. I mean, he's not a game breaker. He's not going to get a ton of penetration defending the run, but he can play a traditional, zero technique position which you're kind of seeing phased out a little bit in the NFL, or a lot bit, depending on, you know, who you talk to. But, you know, he can play that role pretty well. And he, you know, he earned like a 78.2 run defense grade last year. So that's nothing to bat an eye at. I think, you know, if he's playing a role where he's, you know, 350 to 450 snaps a season for us, I think that's a great role for him. And I think he'll do that really well. If you're going to ask him to rush the passer, not very good. So just very, very limited production there. All through his whole career, really, it's been that way. One thing I think people forget, too, is they kind of recognize him coming from Tennessee, but he really spent 4 years with the Broncos, and he was on that Super Bowl team that had, you know, historically good defense and very good against the run, and he was a big part of that team and that success.
So is he essentially then just the new Haloti Ngata?
Yeah, he's even more like true nose tackle than Ngata was. I think Ngata was kind of built like a nose tackle, but he was always more successful as a five technique or even a three technique inside. So I definitely think Sylvester's definitely replacing him, but he's going to play a more traditional nose, which is nice because for a second it kind of looked like they're going to have to have Ashawn do that. And right. I don't think that would work well for him.
So Ashawn's got the size for it, but I mean, everything else kind of.
But right. You know, at like 35 years old, he probably doesn't still have it, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of the, yeah. Did we talk last week about Devin Kennard at all? I'm really trying to remember.
Yeah, we talked about him a little bit.
Well, I mean, why don't we get Brett? Do you have any particular takes on anyone? Because I'm just trying to figure out what else we got on free agency. Brett, we didn't have you last time. Did you have anything you wanted to add on it?
Yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts on Kennard, because I've heard just about everything with this guy. I've heard that he's going to be a traditional outside linebacker. I've heard that he's going to be this guy who's got his hand in the dirt every down as a true defensive end. Where do you see his role being? Is he even going to be a starter in 2018?
Right, so the thing that shocked me, when I heard that they were looking at Kennard, it came pretty quick. Like, we heard they were looking at him, and then he was pretty much signed.
Right.
So the thing that shocked me was the money he got. So that money he got tells me that he's a defensive lineman. Because if you're looking at him to play off the ball linebacker, which he didn't really do in New York, he was, you know, he dropped into coverage a fair amount of times, but it was covering the flat for a running back kind of thing. But he's a D lineman. I think the money they gave him kind of shows that they're looking for him to be the third or fourth edge. And he's, you know, he is flexible, so they can do a little bit more with him than they could, you know, say Anthony Zettel or Kerry Hyder coming back from an injury. So, yeah, I think a lot of people expect him to play that hybrid, like off the ball linebacker, kind of rush the passer on third downs role. I kind of think they're actually not going to do that. I think he's going to be more of an edge guy. He will have his hand in the dirt. I broke down every one of his snaps. I mean, New York used him everywhere on the D line, very rarely off the ball. I mean, even like two of his sacks last year came from playing three technique. Two of them were against Washington. One was on Brandon Scherff, and then one was on the other guard there playing three technique with his hand in the dirt. So, I mean, he's built like a linebacker. He's built like a D lineman. You watch him move. He's not fluid enough to play linebacker, I don't think. So I really see him as a D lineman. I think it's a good. If he's playing edge and he's the third or fourth edge guy, I think it's a good value signing at that money. Otherwise, like, I don't know why you're paying him $6.5 million to play linebacker.
So you don't necessarily even see him as a starter. And if that's the case, is the starter currently on the roster?
So my opinion on this topic is definitely not congruent with most of Lions Twitter.
Okay,
I think they're still going to be more of a traditional 4-3 than anyone likes to think they are.
Okay.
Patricia was slowly phasing out the 3-4 in general. And, you know, you hear the word hybrid thrown around all the time. That doesn't necessarily really mean anything as far as like a front standpoint. All he did that was really different is he took edge guys and moved them around. That's what made them hybrids, you know, like Trey Flowers would play three technique at 270 pounds, and he'd play it really well. He'd even play over the center a lot, playing nose tackle, and he'd play it really well. So that was more of the hybrid that Patricia implemented than, you know, it wasn't like a 3-4-4-3 mix. So I think they are going to look a lot more like a 4-3 team. They will use really big defensive tackles, because he definitely maintained that in New England. But yeah, it's just going to be about guys that can move around. So I think Zettel fits that well. You could easily see him kind of having a Trey Flowers role. He's not nearly as athletic, but you can see Zettel. He played inside in college. I think you could see Patricia using him in the inside, you know, in his new system. Cornelius Washington's also kind of like a flex guy like that. And now Devin Kennard is like that as well. So to answer your actual question, I think Kennard competes for that starting job. He's definitely going to play a lot, you know, whether that's as a starter or not. I'm not really sure, but he's definitely going to play a lot.
The Detroit Lions defensive line, they're going to play a lot.
There's also Kerry Hyder, who we haven't talked about, but who knows what to expect out of Hyder after coming off.
That's kind of the wild card at this point in my book, to be honest, thinking about Kerry Hyder. We're moving into the next segment very soon here about the draft, but just real quick, just to think off of it, like we've talked two big positions of need, tight end or slash slot, and really defensive line and front seven. Which is kind of just real quick in your eyes, Brett, more likely to happen in the first round?
Man, the board is set up. This sounds a little cliche, but the board is set up that honestly, any one of those position of needs, whether it's interior offensive lineman, tight end, defensive tackle, it's like they're going to have a choice between three guys, and it's going to be a pretty difficult choice. They could be, you know, in a situation where they're taking the first tight end off the board or the second running back, or they might be taking their third or fourth, you know, defensive tackle. So I don't really know, to be honest. I would be tempted to say that Patricia's going to want a defensive guy his first draft here. And that side of the ball really does need a playmaker, mm-hmm. someone to contribute at a high level.
Well, let's expand upon that. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, let's dive right into first day of draft talk. Yeah, guys. Yeah, draft. Draft away. It's coming. We'll be right back. And it's spread to Detroit. BrettoDetroit.com, the PODcast. Continuing along, and we're moving out of free agency now because March is nearly done, and we're moving into draft talk, draft Twitter. Draft Twitter coming alive, telling you every little thing, like the size of someone's thigh and just kind of the size shoe they wear and how that means that they are going to be the next Charlie Sanders. Yes, Charlie Sanders was the great Lions tight end.
Nailed it.
I did. I remember my history well enough when it comes to Lions, just not present day. Either way, I hate draft Twitter, but they're everywhere and they're all over me. So we're going to hold off on the, on bagging on too much and just talk about what the Lions may or may not be doing, which I'm sure we are not going to talk at all in the next coming month. So let's just get it out of our systems right now. What do you think about this upcoming draft, Jeremy?
Well,
try not to use a cliche.
This is the time that I officially kind of dip my toe into it because I don't really like wasting my time doing all this draft research before I even know what the Lions' needs are going to be. So I think now that's come into focus. We pretty much know what the Lions' needs are going to be because I don't think there's a splash signing coming around the corner in the next week or two. So I'm going to start. I haven't really done a ton of research yet, but running back obviously is a big area of need. Defensive tackle, that three tech that we were talking about that's not really on the roster, I would love to see something there. Maurice Hurst is a name that I'm definitely have circled on one of the first people that I want to watch even more of, even though obviously I watched quite a bit, being that he's from Michigan. I'm reluctant to start looking at tight ends because I really don't want to see this team draft one in the first couple rounds. And then interior offensive line is obviously the third biggest need, or, you know, one of the top three, not necessarily in third, but interior offensive line. I don't think Kenny Wiggins is a signing that anyone is very excited about. If there is someone excited about the Kenny Wiggins signing, at me on Twitter and tell me why, because I don't see why I should be excited.
We signed Kenny Wiggins.
Exactly. Exactly. So those are the three positions I'm going to be looking at the most is defensive tackle, three tech, running back and that offensive interior line. What about you, Brett? Do you feel the same way? And if so, what are some names that I need to start circling on my draft list?
Yeah, so those three are definitely in the mix. Obviously, because of the Ebron situation, tight end has suddenly become a need. I'm kind of like secretly hoping that the Wilson signing will temper their you know, feeling to need to draft a tight end super high. I guess I won't put them on the huge need list, but I think they're definitely drafting one. And then I would probably add edge defender and linebacker to that. Mm-hmm. I think you could see them draft, you know, any number of combination of those guys. So if you want to go position by position, we can do that.
I guess, well, right now, do you have like a draft crush, a guy that you think is a perfect fit in Detroit and someone that the Lions need to be targeting on the first 2 days?
Oh, man. Well, the guy they absolutely need to target is Maurice Hurst, and you already mentioned him. Mm-hmm. The problem is if he checks out medically, well, that's obviously not a problem. That's a great thing. But if he does check out medically, I really don't think he's going to be close to being available at 20.
Really?
He's that good of a player. I feel like the draft Twitter community is just now really coming around to how good he is. So I think they've kind of been lower on him, which for whatever reason, draft Twitter kind of sets the expectation of everybody.
Absolutely.
But if you talk to guys in the NFL, I think they're a lot higher on Hurst than draft Twitter's been.
That's interesting because for a local guy, he just doesn't seem to have that much support among Lions fans. And I don't know if it's the medical thing. I don't know if it's Spartans fans being all anti-Michigan or if it's maybe, you know, be objective analysis. Because I think a lot of people expect him to maybe be a second round choice. But to hear you say that maybe he doesn't even fall to 20 is kind of surprising to me. We put out a poll this weekend. Only 60% of Lions fans would be happy with the Lions drafting Maurice Hurst in the first round. And that was shocking to me.
That is absolutely insane. I feel like that has to be medical related. Yeah. that they would think that, or it could be just Michigan is kind of like underperformed the last 2 years for like based on expectations. And, you know, they might look at him in a bad light because of that, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, at PFF, also, we have Hurst as a top five guy in this draft.
Wow.
So, go ahead, Brad.
Yeah. The other thing too is though is, you know, a lot of people have their own draft crush too, right? And if it's not Maurice Hurst, then they're not going to be fine with. I mean, that's how binary draft Twitter is, right? I mean, they get so locked in on the one guy that they want that they don't want anybody else.
Right, and that guy's Vita Vey, right?
I mean, right now, like, yeah. What was it last year until like the crap came down? Remember what was happening with Reuben Foster? Everyone. You know, before the Reuben Foster thing got a little soured up, it was Reuben Foster and literally no one else at that position.
Yeah,
that's very – Ryan, that's a great point about draft Twitter. And to add to that, like, Taven Bryan has kind of been the draft Twitter crush of three technique. And so I think people have kind of gone out of their way to discredit Hurst a little bit because they want Bryan to be the guy. But Hurst is a far better player.
And the way that you're talking about Hurst is the way I see draft Twitter talking about Vita Vey. Like, Vita Vey is every Lions fan's draft crush right now. And
which is so weird to me.
Yeah, I've said a couple times on the podcast, I'm not quite as high on the guy as everyone else seems to be. And the hive mind is like, I can see it affecting me. Like, I'm like, okay, yeah, let's get Vita Vey. And then I'm like, wait, I don't even know if I agree with that. Why do I suddenly feel this way?
Right.
But, I guess my issue too has always been like every time these guys fall in love with it, but they're never going to be available. Not a single goddamn one of these guys we're talking about is going to be available because the draft board just goes across the board.
Well, I think Vea has a much better shot to go in the second round than Hurst does.
Interesting.
If you look at the way NFL teams draft, it's rare to see, and this is changing even more in my direction, but it's rare to see defensive tackles, especially big guys like that, go in the first round that don't offer much as a pass rusher. Now, Vea to me is right on that cusp. Like he has just enough juice to warrant a high pick to me, a first round pick, but it's really close to not being there. And if you even look at like the situation with Danny Shelton a couple of weeks ago, I mean, that guy just 3 years ago, he was drafted in the top 10 and he was after three good seasons of hitting, pretty much expectations that he was moved for a third round pick. I mean, that's ridiculous. That shows you how much the NFL's changed in just 3 years. So I have a hard time seeing a guy like Vea going in the first round. I don't think it would necessarily be a bad pick. He's a fine player. He's a great run stuffer, run defender. It's just not super valuable in today's NFL.
I want to hear you talk about Harold Landry like you talked about him when we talked a couple weeks ago, Brett, because you did enough talking to talk me into having him be my guy and being my draft crush. So tell us more about Harold Landry and whether or not you think NFL teams are high on him to the point where he won't be there at 20 for Detroit.
Yeah, sure. You are starting to see people come around to Landry as being, you know, pretty close to Chubb as far as the edge class goes. Not only me, but all of PFF, we've had Landry as our top edge guy for a while over Chubb. If you look at Landry's 2016 tape, that's every bit as good as Myles Garrett, if not better. He's a bendier guy. He can break the edge and bend the edge even better than Garrett can. When it comes to pure pass rush skills, man, he is by far the best guy in this draft to me. And I don't really think it's actually close. And I think Chubb's a phenomenal player.
Yeah, so then tell me why people are – because then you have, like, Tremaine Edmonds too. And, like, you have – there are the edge guys, but then is it just because he's so young?
Who, Landry?
No, Edmonds.
Oh, Edmonds.
From Virginia Tech.
I think he's a traditional off-the-ball linebacker, to be honest. Okay. Now, this draft is lacking some pass rush help. If you went into this offseason needing a pass rusher, there wasn't much in free agency, not a ton in this draft. So you could see a team – Sam Monson actually just said this the other day. You could see a team going after one of the guys like Edmonds or one of Gentry, the other linebacker from Memphis, and keeping them kind of on the edge, because you saw Edmonds do it a little bit in college. And so because of the lack of pass rush help in this draft, I think you could see a team try that out, similar to Hassan Reddick last year. But I honestly don't think that's his best fit. I think Edmonds is an off-the-ball linebacker, and I think he's going to be a damn good one.
What about one of my early draft crushes? And admittedly, I'm still very much in the research portion of my crushing. Marcus Davenport. Obviously, he's got some local connections with Lions coaches, but to me, I just put on a couple of his tapes, and he was just everywhere, blowing up screens, bending the edge. I hear that his technique is not quite as good as it should be, and obviously he was beating up on some pretty bad teams. What are your thoughts on Marcus Davenport as an edge rusher in terms of this class?
Yeah, so I was really high on Davenport going into the draft process. Just, you know, from my experience doing games like in the season. Mm-hmm. I went down to the Senior Bowl, watched him play. He kind of really underwhelmed me, as I think he did everybody there.
Yeah.
And then he actually played really well in the game, so it was kind of weird. He had like a bad week of practice, presumably, and then just kind of had like a really good game. So that was strange, but yeah, technique is not really there. He's really raw. My comp for him is actually Ziggy Ansah. And he's longer than Ziggy. Like, he's a tall guy. I think he's 6'6" or something like that. But, you know, you see that raw potential where Ziggy was super duper raw. I mean, he was a freak athlete and he really only had one move, speed to power. Davenport's kind of the same way. He's got one move that he sticks with. You know, he doesn't really offer much out of that, but he's got that potential, man. He's got the athletic ability. He's graded really well for us at PFF. He's, you know, been pretty productive. I think consistency has been an issue. And that's obviously kind of concerning at the level he was playing at UTSA right there. So he's a very viable guy at 20, although he does have like the draft riser kind of profile to him because he is so mysterious and raw and athletic. You could see him maybe go higher than he probably should just because of those things. And I also mentioned, you know, the premium on edge rushers this year in the draft, because there aren't many, that's going to bump him up quite a bit as well. But it's a viable guy at 20 for sure. I think it would be rough having him and Ansah together because Ansah hasn't really developed a ton of technique. But it could be a great replacement for Ansa as well.
Right, and I think that's the idea. I don't know if a lot of people see Ansa on this team in 2019, but at this point, obviously, they're sticking with him for 2018.
Right.
All right. Brett Whitefield, thank you very much for all the insight. You want to stick around for the mailbag?
Sure.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to dive right into the mailbag, get your questions out of the way, and just kind of nail through everything we can. Again, kind of a weird POD cast going on here, but we greatly appreciate Brett sticking around. So we will be right back. Mailbag. Mail time, hashtag AskPOD. As always, it's where it is on Twitter, through the thread, through now Discord as well, which again, if you haven't joined the Pride Detroit Discord, you should hit up myself or Jeremy for an invite. All right, Jeremy, the reviews, as always.
Yep, we still got a little bit of backlog, so let's catch up here. Our first review comes from Ryan C. Metz. He says, quite eh, maybe a little bit better. But he gave us 5 stars. He says, mixes enough non-Lions talk to mix it up this with the same old Lions talk. And yes, Pegasus is terrible. Hashtag no wrestling talk. That goes back a couple months. Who was trashing Pegasus? I don't remember.
You guys were.
I'm out. I'm Ryan out on was... Pegasus. Pegasus is garbage. It's hot garbage. Right. Don't go to Pegasus. Nothing about Pegasus is good other than the fact that they won't throw you out. They want your money.
Did you have another encounter with them the other night, Ryan? Is that what this is about?
No, just Pegasus is trash. It's garbage food.
It's not good. It wasn't even my favorite Euro place on that stretch of Greek town. There was a better one, but I think they shut down. So, anyway.
All right, number two comes from Floundericious WA. I can't read the full... Okay. I can't read the full subject. It says the home for people who is probably says love Lions or something. 5 stars says Jeremy, Ryan, and Chris are a hoot to listen to. They have a naturally adequate repartee, and they seem to know a little bit about football and the Lions as well. They are great to follow on Twitter and seem to make a point of enjoying the sometimes frustrating and ridiculous spectacle that is Detroit Lions football. Also, they have helped me answer fundamental lifelong questions like, are quesadillas sandwiches? Can you make a PB&J sandwich with a tortilla? Yes, you can. Are mozzarella sticks the work of the devil? I found new meaning in life because of them.
Well, you know what? We're just improving lives all over the place, I guess.
We are, for our lovers and our haters. Mm-hmm. Wink.
Is a Pop-Tart ravioli?
Oh,
yes, it is.
We're going to start with Discord because, again, it's brand new and swarthy and swank. So Turbo Butts asking us, why does Billingsley insist on having a seventh grader's haircut?
Oh come on. No, I'm not participating in this question. Jace Billingsley is love. He's everything.
I mean, there's nothing different about his haircut from 14-year-old Justin Bieber. So I totally see it and I understand it.
Is that like a middle of the country thing, a Nevada thing, maybe? No, not going to answer that.
I don't know.
All right.
I think it's a teen heartthrob kind of thing.
Next question from Marilink. Who do you think had more to do with Ebron release, the Lions organization or Ebron himself?
Can we say both?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a dance of both, though fans are more than willing to heap everything at the feet of Ebron.
I mean, that rumor out there that was put out there by Jeff Risden that he basically would not accept a trade and not sign an extension with any other team.
Okay, but that's not that's not in a vacuum. That's after, like, I'm sure a lot more incidents before it. That's, again, these two just escalating the situation with each other. It's not just Ebron woke up one day and said, I'm going to refuse all trades. That's not what fucking happened.
There's also the report that they offered him a contract extension last offseason, and he said no.
Ooh, I didn't hear that one. I don't know.
Not sure if that was credible. No, I just
Again, once again, like, we need names to these things, so I'm not gonna take them until I have names on them. And look, this required a two-step dance to really happen. It's not like the Lions were compelled to cut him or else. So, and I mean, I don't know. I thought he could have been a great face for it. And as many Lions fans have been yelling and screaming death at him, there were a lot of young Lions fans who were crying about his departure. So just, I don't know, man. It just sucks across the board. That was the point of my, that was kind of the driving point of my column last week. It just, it sucks. It sucks more than you being vindicated that your opinion that Eric Ebron can't catch anything, even though the stats don't back you up, is vindicated.
He just needed to not be here. And it wasn't a thing about him. Like you said in your article, Chris, like, ever since he was picked at 10 by Mayhew and that current and that then current Lions regime, like, it was doomed from the start. Like, it was going to be almost impossible for him to live up to expectations. And then every event that happened after that, just it wasn't an amicable relationship, and he needed to be somewhere else.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys this question. Does him not being on the Lions, does that have anything to do with talent?
Maybe that can go to Brett, because here's the thing. Like, I looked at what he put together at the end of 2017, and I know that tight ends take some time to jump into this league unless you are a freak like Jimmy Graham, that I was more than willing to say, like, okay, the talent looks like it's there. And as I pointed out on a Jeff Stalt, like, people can point out their anecdotes about critical time drops, but Eric Ebron's completion catch rate is about average with your top tight ends in the league.
Yeah, the talent thing, I mean, that's tough, because how do you define talent? You know, in like a raw vacuum, is Ebron talented? Yes, of course. But he didn't really develop, I think, at the rate that they had expected to be going into his fifth year. And a lot of it, you know, you hate saying things like this because you don't really know, because you're not talking to the player every day. But some of it seemed effort related, especially in the run game, you know, his run blocking. And I think that was just really frustrating. And I think Quinn is on a mission to kind of get rid of any type of culture like that. And unfortunately, you know, I just think they kind of gave up on him, you know, and I think Ebron gave up on them in return. I think it was mutual.
I want to say this too, like, besides quarterback, obviously, but is there a more complex position to really play on defense? One that requires you to, I mean, on offense, one that requires you to wear as many hats as a tight end, to block, to catch, to run, you know, different types of routes and everything. Like, it seems like a multifaceted layer that we're still trying to grasp the idea of being kind of a catch first option, really.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, Lions have had historically some great tight ends too, like Charlie Sanders and I'm blanking out their names, but yeah.
David Sloan.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. You just make that up?
No, that's a real guy.
Okay.
Tony Scheffler.
Pettigrew.
Okay. That was the other thing that always stuck out weird to me, too, is like, yeah, like, just the Pettigrew was there when Ebron came in, but whatever. Enough on Ebron. People are going to get mad at me again. So next question from KH Maker D from Twitter now. What is your favorite March Madness memory?
Oof.
I just want to say, question. Like, it's pretty cool that Loyola Chicago's in the Final Four. There's something very Gonzaga feeling about it.
You think it's like that transformative of a moment for their college, though?
I mean, it's in Chicago, and it's a Jesuit school in Chicago. So, I mean, just, you can what you think all the great basketball players of Chicago are going out to play at Northwestern? No, there hasn't been a local school. I mean, actually, wait, I'm trying to think. No, Butler's in Indiana. I think there is like a Big East school kind of near Chicago, but still, I think they can capture a pretty good thing. But I think my favorite moment, though, if we're just talking like all time, I wasn't alive for it, but I love going back and watching that 30 for 30 on Jim Valvano's NC State.
Mm-hmm.
That just, it's set up perfectly, and I can absolutely see why they did the documentary on that team.
My favorite moment is probably 2006 UCLA Gonzaga and Adam Morrison just falling to the floor and crying.
Such a dick.
Wow.
I mean, like, Adam Morrison was everything that like everybody really wanted out of basketball at that point. Like, I mean, the dude is averaging like 28 points. Then he goes to the NBA, and according to Jared Dudley, he like never showered. So,
okay.
This is all. This is from the mouth of Jared Dudley. Like, he had a problem with like just like basic personal hygiene.
So was that crustache he had? Was that just dirt? That wasn't even hair. Just growing on his upper lip.
He just didn't have access to a razor or a loofah. But it was the way that like he was like laying on the ground. I'm looking at the picture right now, but his like legs are crossed and he's laying on his stomach and he's like pulling his jersey up to his face and he's just crying. Like,
and you love watching grown men cry.
I mean, if they just lost a child's game, yeah, that's yeah, sure.
All right,
ugly crier too.
Shafty Von Hack asking us, what do you consider the greatest movie of all? I'm sorry, I completely forgot. Brett, what's your
March? I don't have time to watch college basketball. Pass.
If I can't even ask Jeremy this question because it's gonna be Michigan related.
Yeah, it's Trey Burke.
Shut up,
it's Trey Burke. Yeah. I was going to say Trey Burke, but then I had to think of something decidedly more.
What about that kid, the Louisville kid, who, like, his leg completely destroyed?
No, not Kevin Ware.
No, but I'm talking not Kevin Ware itself, but Louisville going on to win it with, you know, getting all charged up for Kevin Ware.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's the year that goaltending on Trey Burke.
Yeah. Shafty Von Hack, what do you consider the greatest movie of all time?
Oh, come on. This is a fool's errand.
Well, it's an interesting because he put it best movie, not favorite movie. And there's a distinction
greatest.
There's still a distinction there, right? Like greatest movie doesn't necessarily mean favorite. I think there's a distinction
between favorite, best, and greatest.
So what's your answer for any of those?
I think my answer for all three is no, I'm not going to say Goodfellas. It's tempting, but it's, when I hear the word greatest, I start thinking old school stuff. So I want to say like either Godfather or Casablanca or something.
Who was the Jagaloon who said something about Al Pacino being the worst part of the Godfather?
I don't remember, but that person's wrong.
What an idiot. Was that Zaglinski?
Yeah, it was Zaglinski. It was Zaglinski. We were all having a yell at him on Slack that night. I remember now.
Dude, I hate that kid. I don't know, Brett. Do you have an answer for this? I'm still thinking.
Yeah, clear cut answer. The Dark Knight.
Oh.
I know it's a hot take. It's a hot take.
I just think Dark Knight and like all those Christopher Nolan Batmans, they're kind of in the same vein as Gladiator in that we thought they were good when they we thought they were like the greatest when they first came out. We thought they were really good a few years after. And then I'll give it about like another 10 years or so and people are going to be like, how the hell do we like that shit?
Well, it's been 10 years since The Dark Knight came out.
I said another 10 years. People are just now coming around to admitting that Gladiator is trash.
That's also blasphemy, but anyways.
I thought for sure it was gonna be a war movie from Brett. I thought for sure it was gonna be like Dunkirk was or Saving Private Ryan.
I will say, like, if you had said Apocalypse Now as like greatest movie, I wouldn't disagree with that.
What about Pulp Fiction?
It's up there. Pulp Fiction guy.
Yeah,
the big Christopher Walken scene guy. Sean Baker, Mr. Walken scene guy. He die, he give me to watch. Yeah. No, I'm a big wow.
Wow. All right. Let's see here. Jamario.
All of us doing Christopher Walken impressions for the end of this podcast.
Jamario Jackson.
Because the answer was Batman Returns. I'm sorry, Chris. The answer was Batman Returns.
Jamario Jackson. Is there a possibility you get rid of Chris Perfett?
If wow. he doesn't follow the Lions news more closely, we might. Wow. I mean, you guys might have to.
It's true.
That's fine. That's fine.
It's fine.
I'm so tired. It's just fine.
You're going to be on the radio with Rob Parker before you know it, so maybe we'll have to just find
fine,
a replacement.
That's fine, I'd be able to get paid through that. So. You know what? You know what? This is my... Okay, I'm submitting a question now to the mailbag. Joe Pesci or Danny DeVito?
Oh, don't. Why? Don't tie my hands like this.
DeVito. DeVito just because of Death to Smoochie.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. DeVito wins.
It's a hair's breadth though, right?
Oh yeah, I don't know. Pesci in Casino is so good too.
I mean, the problem too is Pesci hasn't been acting for a while now too, so you kind of have to go back a bit to remember how good he was.
Yeah, yeah. DeVito was also the Penguin in Batman Returns. So.
He was a great Penguin. Brett, Jeremy, you have an answer to this? DeVito or Pesci?
Pesci.
Contrarian.
What's the PFF score on Pesci?
85.
35?
No, 85.
85. It's pretty good. I like that.
Where does that rank among actors under 5'2"?
First. First. Well, it depends if you go by Tom Cruise's combine.
No, all right. All right. Let's see here. Harrington HOF, what is your favorite Luke Wilson movie? Do you think his relative failure in show business will affect his time with the Lions?
God. How many of these jokes are we going to have to wade through this season?
I think just the first wave, but the answer is Royal Tenenbaums.
Okay. John Whitaker, Wrath of John. Who would win in a Hell in a Cell match between Ninja, Drake, Juju, and Jeremy?
Everything is a Hell in a Cell match.
Hold up, but do we have to explain for the olds who Ninja is?
Yes, obviously.
Ninja and Drake are the whole reason you guys are playing Fortnite.
It's the whole reason I'm playing Fortnite, that's true.
So Ninja's just a Twitch streamer. He plays games, and he played Fortnite with Drake. It blew up, and now everyone is playing Fortnite there. He's also apparently he's a Lions fan, right? I think he's confirmed this through Discord. Yeah,
he's a fan of Eric Ebron too.
Oh, I'm not a fan of
Fortnite. So how about that?
Me,
Hamza.
Yeah, we have to answer the question.
Oh, it's whatever. I didn't care about the question. D. Brooks, blah, blah, obligatory Hankins question.
Oh my God. Just every single day. I feel like every 5 hours, someone has a scheduled tweet at Pride of Detroit. Any words on Hankins' visit? No, it's probably not happening. Give up on your dreams.
No hope.
Are you answering their question, Jeremy, or are you talking to yourself?
It's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both. I think that could just be essentially the tagline to this podcast, is give up on hope.
No. The tagline
here
is
we
no.
go. Here we go for giving up on hope. Hamza asking us, realistically, what do you think are the odds that Ronald Jones is available in round two?
Realistic.
Brett? There you go.
I think they're realistic. Not saying it's going to happen, but I think it's realistic.
Put a percentage on it for the people.
65%.
Oh, okay.
It's close. I like Ronald Jones, but I'm saying that mostly just because I saw him at USC.
He's the only running back you saw play.
I know I saw plenty of Nick Chubb and some others play too. It's just that I was able to see Ronald Jones in person, and that's what is tainting my view.
It reminds me we didn't talk running backs at all.
Yeah, we'll have to do that another time. Another time. Okay. We've got to stagger out this offseason a bit.
Do you know, like when you want to really see a person or maybe go on a second date with somebody and you leave something so that you have to come back and you have to meet for it? That's what we're doing with you, Brett. We didn't talk about running backs. We left them off the table. we got to come back and get our favorite jacket.
All right.
Robert Palma.
That may be one of the best compliments you're ever going to be given in your entire life, Brett.
That you're our jacket.
You're our favorite jacket.
That is pretty incredible, and I'm definitely honored. We're at the point, though, in our dating relationship where we should probably all just get married because we're on, like, the fifth date now?
It's true. Yeah, all of us in Eric Ebron joining a big monogamy big house.
Robert Palma, if Steelers called and offered Bell for Ansa, would you do it?
Oh my gosh, what a terrible question.
I'd like to know who beat the Steelers over the head for that.
I want to know who the person was, Jeremy, that asked you on Twitter, is there any truth to the rumors of trading Theo Riddick in a second round pick for Le'Veon Bell?
I'm not gonna put that person on blast, but that is a real tweet that we got, and I told them no, stop smoking weed, or whoever your source is, stop trusting them with anything, because one, the Lions couldn't fit that contract on their books; two, the Steelers would never make that trade.
That's and amazing. Three, I don't think the Lions would make that trade, even if they had the cap flexibility to do it.
Probably not.
Yeah, re the Ansa for Bell thing. That seems like a bad deal for both teams, kind of. I don't know. It's just kind of weird.
Let's see here. Von Alt. I've been seeing a lot of honey badger news lately, and your mention of hypothetical fights make me wonder, how many badgers do you think would be needed to take down a lion?
Like Tyrann Mathews or actual honey badgers?
Actual badgers.
I don't know. It's got to be like, what do you call a group of honey badgers? Is it kind of like, isn't a goose is called a gaggle?
I think we just call it a cluster.
A cluster of badgers?
I'd set the over under.
I was trying to do the out.
Oh.
So.
I'd set the over under at 15 badgers. What are you taking?
I'm going.
Oh, that's a good number.
That is a good number, Jeremy. Dang.
I've done my research.
I guess I'd go over. I'd go over.
I'd say this podcast is over.
Perfect.
Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit POD cast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd. IamBrianSHEPARD. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday. So go check him out. That's I am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you, Starside.